Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How you doing, internet? It is May 29th, 2017. Happy Memorial Day. Thank you for your service, folks who have served. Thank you, just everyone in general, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio. We are not live, but we are, at least some of us, are in Lobby 1 at Vice HQ. I am joined today, not by Austin, because Austin is a little sick. He's having a time with some illness. So instead, I have Rob Zachney on the horn coming in from L.A.
Hey, happy Memorial Day.
Yeah, and we also have a very special guest. Now, this is a man who listens to pretty much all of our podcasts, every single episode.
You could call me the biggest fan.
You could call Tim Barnes.
I've also been mistaken for Austin Walker.
Oh, man.
So
yeah, that's a real thing. That definitely. Do you
fantastic.
Want to tell that story, Tim?
Well, there was someone who worked at an office. I don't know how much.
Yeah, there was an office.
There was once an office.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe both me and Austin worked in said office.
In this particular
hypothetically.
Office.
Yeah. And one day I'm just hanging out and Austin was out of town. Someone walks up to me and says, "Hey, you're on vacation."
Oh, no.
And I thought this was how someone says, "You look like you're having a good time."
Oh, my
you know,
God.
Like, hey, I thought it was a phrase I never heard. You're on vacation. Like, oh, yeah, I'm on vacation. I'm chilling.
Yeah, like you thought. Like,
that's what we say now.
Hey, man. I'm literally Tim.
You look like you're on vacation.
And I'm having fun.
And then slowly I realized that they thought I was someone else because they were like, "You haven't been responding to my emails. Every time I email you, it says you're out of town."
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I haven't checked my – that could be. I think I once had a setting like that on my emails. I checked it, and I was like, I'm on vacation. I don't see anything wrong with my emails. And then they go, yeah, and they show me – an email correspondence. I see that it says Austin, and I'm in so much shock that I'd never thought I'd be in this type of situation in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know how to.
You sure were more good humor
so
about
just,
this than I would have been. I would have
well,
been.
As
and,
a that,
and that's when you were like,
just go,
look, yeah. The only flag I've got on these emails is Tim Barnes needs a fucking raise.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
yeah.
Ooh.
As a comedian, some things just go on a list of like,
this needs to be a joke.
This needs to be a joke. And
yeah.
I think that helps me in these situations. I'm a fly on my own wall.
I see. Well, you definitely handled that one better. I, you know, if somebody was like, I don't know, if I was like, oh, the token queer or the token woman or whatever, and like that sort of thing happened, I don't know if I would have been able to be as completely. I feel like I would have at least made some jokes at their expense. Like, I would have been like, oh,
yeah.
All lesbians look alike.
Yeah.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Don't you find yourself in situations like this where, like, I don't want to hear an apology right now. I don't want to see someone go through that. I want to avoid it.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
like the,
I guess
the
that's
sheer,
true.
The sheer number of times, like, I've just been hanging out and, like, people decide they're in a safe space to tell their Mexican jokes.
Oh boy.
Is real, real good. And where it gets awkward now is where it gets more awkward.
Yeah, yes.
Is that, like, I just, like, there's a lot of times where I don't want to deal. I don't want to have to somehow, like, apologize to them for letting them know I'm Mexican and, like,
yeah.
That's not
oh,
cool.
God.
I just, like,
yeah.
I don't want to go fucking through it. So I just kind of, like, ignore it or just, like, yeah, whatever, move along. But my girlfriend is not going to have that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she will be like, oh, that's a funny joke. Did you know that I was Mexican? And I'm like, God, like, I, you know, on the one hand, like, I appreciate it. I do. And you know what? I probably should have mounted up for this one too, because like, no, like everyone has heard your refried bean joke and it's not funny and you're an asshole. But at the same time, like, I'm just trying to have dinner here.
You're just trying to get through your day. You didn't need that in your day, right?
I feel like it's almost a sadistic benefit when you're in those situations to not comment on it and just know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like a catalog in my mind of, like, I know this about you and you don't even think it's weird.
Yeah. It's like, oh, all right. You think everyone looks alike. Cool. Not going to invite you to my fun birthday party.
Like, I wonder if that person would ever have known. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when Austin was back in the office, would they ever realize, there's a follow-up to the story.
It gets better, Rob.
I mean, I thought, you know, I'm just going to avoid this and it'll never. And then Austin was still on vacation, I think. And then one day, like, I kind of, in this office that is not.
No particular place.
On the actual realm of reality.
This is the hypothetical office.
This was a dream.
It was definitely a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could have done an amazing gaslighting thing. Like, it would have been like Steve.
Yeah, seriously. Where,
like, this person, like, keeps having, like, meetings with Austin. And then, like, 10 minutes later.
That was the thing. I remember having full-on conversations with this person, and I don't know if they thought I was Austin or not.
Oh my God.
I was talking to them about the Gilmore Girls, like a very specific conversation about the Netflix Gilmore Girls reboot or whatever it was.
Did they ask Austin about the Gilmore Girls? Like,
what? I don't know. But I kind of sat diagonal from this person.
Oh my God.
And so then one day, like, they walked up to me again. It was like, hey, you, like, what's up with your email?
Oh God.
And I still didn't do the thing because I don't like those situations.
Right,
but then
right.
I decided I'm going to send an email from my account saying, hey, I don't see anything is wrong. And then they'll notice that my name on the email isn't Austin.
Oh, that's very good.
I think that worked out.
That one did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took a while, but that one did it.
Weirdly, that person has never made eye contact with you since then, but...
Yeah, exactly.
But it's good to know that, you know, in a hypothetical workspace, we could fill in for each other if one of us were sick.
Oh, boy.
Perhaps.
God, this is so dangerous. This is like a situation where, like, this is really dangerous, right? Because it's like the president has a double. But it's not really double. It's just someone who can, like, double as the president. Nobody will notice. And so, like, basically, you know, if Timber wants to use that power for evil, he just can.
Like, he totally could.
You know, hey, did you know that Waypoint is now a stand-up comedy site? Weird.
Here's my question for the Waypoint audience. Do all light people look alike?
It's a good question.
I don't know.
Do they? Good question.
Well, that's actually that is something I do wonder about. Is like, because I know that, like, in cases like witness identification, like cross ethnicity identification is just genuinely, like, generally bad. But I don't know if if just white people are terrible at seeing those differences. Or, like, does anyone from one ethnicity kind of on some level suck just a little bit at identifying individuals of another ethnicity? I don't know.
As I understand it, it's I have a PhD in psychology. I remember something about this psychology class that was like, yes, people generally and it's not just ethnicity, but it's like in group kind of stuff. Like, you consider your in group to be whatever it is. And like, you are just generally better at identifying things like age, like how old is this person? And like, you happen to know more about that group, but it's, I don't know. Human beings are bad and terrible. Yeah.
I thought it was weird when I met Tim and he was like, Oliver Platt, I love your work.
I think we as humans have reached a cap of how many people we are supposed to store in our minds anyway.
Yeah.
And so I get there sometimes, like, in a matter of seconds, I'll go through, like, oh, like, height, ethnicity, hair, like, in a matter of seconds, I realize, oh, they're not that person. You know, it's like you're walking past somebody. But I've never been in a full-on conversation with someone
Right, that's the part that I found very troubling. It's like, not, it's not like from across the room, from across a football field. It was like I've had contact with this person. We're looking eye to eye. We're 2 feet apart. Like, that's the part where I was like, that's a little bad.
A little bad.
You know? But, you know, I guess things that aren't bad. Speaking of a good segue, well, it might be bad.
You know what's never bad and never racially charged? Video games.
Is our question bucket. Well, I was talking about our question bucket, which, by the way, Tim, it's so good that you're here because on this very special Memorial Day episode, because it's a question bucket episode, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were the person who made a Waypoint forum thread that was, what does the question bucket look like?
Yes.
That was you, right?
I love to hop in the forums every now and then with an absurd question. And there were some great answers.
There's some very specific one, right?
Long. And it's something to think about. You never see the question bucket on the Twitch stream. You never hear it on the podcast, but it definitely is here.
You know, I definitely had a very specific visual when I think of the question bucket. And maybe this is a very New Englander thing to think, but I think of like a sweating, like a rusty steel bucket, like a fisherman who's been doing this for 45 years.
Yeah.
Takes his bucket, and it's sweating, and there's a little bit of rust, and like there's fish, there's crabs, whatever.
But there's a couple emails.
You know, and it's all like emails, but it's it's like a very sweaty, it's like a hefty thing. He's wearing like a yellow slicker, because it's a rainy day, it's a terrible day in Gloucester, and he just takes his bucket, and he's just like, there it is. That's how I think of art. You know, Gloucester.
It's the best place, actually.
It's a very special place. Very special place. So Tim, now that I give you that beautiful visual, I want you to visualize a number.
Okay.
We're going to tackle some questions.
Just
in the
reach
bucket.
In to that rusty,
everything's about race with me today and always, really.
And always. You know?
But I just found out today that I'm 25% Irish, and
Whoa.
So my number is 25.
That's very exciting. I am also 25% Irish. You know, we got a lot in common, Tim.
Dude, guys, I know. I'm also 25% Irish.
Holy shit!
Is that real? No, for real.
Like, I'm Irish, Polish, Mexican. More Mexican than anything.
That's amazing! Rob, I'm so happy.
I guess what we learned is that the Irish really...
They really got around. You know, those Irish. You know, don't count an Irish person down. All right, this one comes from Steve. I don't know if Steve is 25% Irish, but if Steve is 25% Irish...
Probability serves us.
Oh, my God. All right. In the current landscape of gaming, it would be easy to devote 10 to 20 hours a week to exploring even just the most marketed releases and still not manage to go into depth on most of them. How often do you turn to opinions and input of others to round out your gaming knowledge and experience, whether it's from experts, professionals, friends, or the wisdom of the crowd? How has that changed you both? I think this is an older one. As you and gaming have changed. Is it important to do this even as a lot of professional coverage moves towards personal experience rather than touching everything? It's so easy for me to take a factual statement like, Austin likes this game, and have it transform over the course of weeks of discussion to, this game is good, I like this game, without any extra input from me. I see it happening, and it happens anyway. How do you deal?
Wow. I don't play that many video games. I will say for movies,
yes,
I think it's important to see them before the think pieces come out.
Yes.
Because then the think pieces affect your whole game plan of watching the movie.
It's
and
true.
I know some people, I love the movie Get Out. I saw Get Out before the think pieces came out.
Good.
But I know some people who saw Get Out after the think pieces came out. And so part of their thought process was, is this movie as woke as people are saying? Is it, you know what I mean? Like, there's this whole other, like, plethora of things going in. And I think it ruins partially sometimes just going to see a movie and, like, having that conversation with the people you went to go see the movie with.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. My girlfriend is very into, okay, I don't even care about this, but we need to see it before everybody talks about it so I even get a chance to think about whether I care about this or not, which is very, like, it's also very, like, if you're on Twitter a lot, I feel like, you know, are you in the Twitter media landscape, you will hear everything about everything within the span of 3 hours, right? Like, it's just the arc will happen whether or not you are sort of privy to it or not. Like, it's just going to come at your face via Twitter or Facebook or that sort of thing. So, yeah, when I was reviewing games, which was a big part of my career, I spent a couple of years doing that very specifically, I would never look at another review or piece as far as I could help it on a game until I was done with the game. And then as soon as I like finished the game and had written the review and I sent that text in, then I would go and like look at other stuff. Because I do think it's important to be sort of in on the conversation about stuff if it's your job specifically. I don't think that people necessarily need to do that if they don't do this for a living or don't do this for, you know, a specific hobby or something like that. But I like being in on the conversation and it helps me, you know, sort of crystallize my thoughts. But I would never let that affect the review when I was reviewing that kind of thing. Because it was like, no, this is my pure experience with this thing, right? But I, you know, as we don't do, you know, reviews here specifically, I like to kind of do the balanced approach. I like to try to play things and not read too much about them unless I've, you know, gotten pretty far along with something, at least a good few hours. As Steve is saying here, 10 to 20 hours is a lot.
Yeah.
Even just if I'm doing the dipping a toe into. So I try to have a balanced diet with this sort of stuff. How about you, Rob? How much are you sort of doing the discourse during and after playing a game?
So I'm like, I actually really envy, not envy is the wrong word. I admire people who sort of put the blackout curtains up and like experience the thing just through their own lens and not completely informed by all the takes. Like, God, this is a couple months ago now, but when we had Evan Narcisse on on the weekend, you know, hearing him talk about his critical method, which is very sort of like once he's into a thing, he kind of seals himself off from the conversation around it and only surfaces into that conversation after he's gotten his thoughts clear. My suspicion is that's a more honest and probably going to generate more unique views on different works. I just do not have that self-control. Like, I am in the middle. Like, I will be, you know, if I'm good, I will hold off on, like, putting pen to paper. I will hold off on reading stuff until I've, like, gotten a draft done. But a lot of times, like, I'm just kind of, I'm still seeing what people are saying. And, yeah, like, I'm fine with it. I think the bigger issue for me is I think it's very easy to... It feels like it moves very fast now, right? Like, it goes from, you should check out this thing, to, you have to check out to this thing, to, this thing is bad, actually, to, man, the people saying this thing is bad are actually the real bad thing. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And the some effect of that the speed at which the discourse, like, processes these feelings and, like, turns hyperbole into yet more overreaction, and then... that can actually turn me off of something before I ever have a chance to experience it. And that's the thing I watch for the most.
Why I still haven't read the Bible.
Nice. Oh, Tim.
I will say, when people I really like are making really good arguments for a thing, I will become sort of a homer about a thing that maybe I haven't played or watched, which is a weird thing, right? Like, I will be in conversation saying, "Oh, that game's fantastic! Like, that game's one of the best of the year." Like, I like Invisible Ink, but at the end of 2015, where Austin was sort of really championing Invisible Ink, it sort of shot up in my estimation as well, probably beyond what my own reaction would support. It just became like, oh, well, this is, I've heard such good things about this game that I played it has to be one of the best of the year.
Yeah, I definitely do that. I'm very, very, very guilty of that, especially when, it's not only somebody that you like, but it's also somebody who you think, like, oh, he knows what he's talking about. You know, like a very, like, he's a wise man. He knows what's going on. He knows what's up. Like, yeah, I support that opinion. Mm. It's a very, like, I think it's a pretty natural instinct with a lot of things. But, yeah, it sure is a thing. Well, thank you, Steve. It's a good question.
Yeah, that was great.
I hope you're 25% Irish, Steve, because that would have been real, real perfect. Rob, how about you?
48.
What's a 48? We're going to 48, baby. Here we go. What was the 48th state? Alaska?
Not Hawaii.
No, right.
Not Alaska.
No, that. It was not Alaska.
Probably
we'll figure
Dakota,
it out.
Dakota, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah, that sounds about right. You know. Anyway, this one comes from Rick. Rick says, here's what I would love to hear your take on. Do you think that gaming journalists are continuing to follow the same old paradigm they've followed for years, given that most of the time and energies are following the AAAs, while the AAAs are snubbing them? I'm talking about Bethesda's new policy of not sending advanced copies of new releases, instead concentrating on influencers like YouTubers and Twitchers. I've never heard Twitchers before, but I like that. Sorry, that was editorializing. Back to Rick. Meanwhile, Steam Spy releases a story that almost 40% of the games that are available on Steam came out last year, which would suggest that the bulk of those were from indies. And yes, I get that at least half of games are probably shovelware and barely qualified as games, but I never dreamed that so many, too many games would be a problem back in 2013. Every gaming site seems to be still be caught up in following the big releases and getting their reviews and comments up first. Yet, we've heard how the AAA releases of the last few months have been somewhat mediocre in sales. I'm not sure exactly when this is from, but anyway, it goes on. I'm gonna take some of this out because it's a good long letter. I love games. I'm 61 years old. I'm tired of Assassin's Creed and all the big-name AAA FPSs. I especially love indie games, and I'm finding it difficult to navigate through hundreds of new releases every month. I have your site bookmarked, along with most of your competitors, but you're all covering the same three games every week. Emphasis is Rick's. Wow. I've read more about Dishonored 2 in the last 7 days than I would ever want. Yes, I get that you folks do spend some time with small indies. I especially liked Danielle's coverage of the Good Bundle on Itch.io Indies. Honestly, I get that you need eyeballs on the website, but I can't be the only indie aficionado out there, am I? So what's the problem? Is covering indie games extensively too much work for too little gain? Is it possible you're all doing the same things you've always done without looking around and noticing that things have changed in the gaming world? Respectfully, Rick.
That's what we call in the business a good question.
It is a very good question.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
Gauntlet thrown. Now, I do think, if I'm getting the timing right here, I think this was like around the end of last year, probably, if there was a lot of Dishonored 2 talk. Mm-hmm. And end of year does tend to be very weighted towards big experiences. That's not always true, but that is sort of kind of what's fresh in your mind, because the big guns tend to be thrown down in the sort of fall release schedule, so that may have been a bit of that going on, but and that is sort of less true now that March has become the new September, October, November for games. I also do think that we write a lot about indie games at Waypoint in particular.
Agree.
I think we do, considering there's only six of us full-time, and we certainly write about small games a lot. But this is also a very fair point. Like, Rick is not wrong. There's a lot of different audiences out there. There's a lot of people looking for different types of games. I would tell Rick to definitely go to our free play section, where we write about a tiny, tiny, itty-bitty indie game 3 days a week. Like, that's a Monday, Wednesday, Friday feature that we do. And it's also games that are free that you can just play. You can just pick them up. You can just play them. You don't have to pay any money. But I do also think that Rick has a point. Sometimes we are all talking about the same thing.
What do you think, Austin?
Yeah, Austin. Austin, how are you feeling about that? Oh, no.
Well, you know what it is.
You already know what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm curious, like... So, Tim, you are sort of eavesdropping on the podcast every week. You actually get to hear it twice, maybe three times before you're done.
Yeah.
I am kind of curious what you make of how these conversations, come together.
Conversations in terms of, the podcast?
In terms of what dominates the conversation, yeah.
What dominates the conversation? Well, I think, the podcast functions the way people play video games, right? It's continual conversation. It's a continual journey into the world, sometimes of a particular game. Like, how long does it take you to finish
PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds?
PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Oh, boy. I mean, that's actually a very good question, because that's the type of game that is a sort of evergreen game, right? It's not like a one single player, you go to A to B to C and a thing happens and you went on a magical journey. It's more like, it's almost more like a sport. You go in, you play a game, and then, you know, you play around, and then, you know,
that's those conversations that dominate the podcast and perhaps the website are because some games, you know, dominate people's minds.
Yes.
And there's a lot to explore.
And we're always trying. And of course, like, it just...
By the way, I think I'd be a great politician because of how I answered this question.
I think you absolutely would. You did a beautiful job. By the way, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is, like, up on a Steam window, like, over here. And he definitely did the thing where it's like, yep, I'm talking about that.
Yeah. How much does glass of water dominate plant?
Clearly, the plant needed a glass of water... to survive. But like, you know, to be completely honest, we do have to there is a desire to write about the things that people care about so that people will come to our website and we will continue to have jobs. That is also a thing that is real. I don't think that's you know, too much of the sausage being made, but that is clearly
a truth. Is there a correlation, though? Are a lot of indie games that in-depth, that world-grabbing?
Some are, absolutely. I'm probably also the at a bigger website, when I was at like a Polygon or something like that, I was definitely someone who probably enjoyed indie games more than a lot of AAA games. I still am to some extent, certainly, but I do. Yeah. I also like big games. I just kind of have a wide range of stuff that I like.
What does AAA mean?
Extremely high budget.
Okay.
Typically, right. Like, you know, it actually maps really, really easily onto, it's not 100%, but it does map pretty easily onto movies, like an indie movie, like a small production that might be weirder or more experimental or different or just made like on a shoestring versus like a tentpole kind of movie, like a Marvel movie or a, you know, just anything with a massive budget. Basically.
Could part of it be because if you were to spend a lot of time.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I guess the question isn't about spending more time on particular indie games, but do you think psychologically it's like if we wrote 5 articles about this one indie game, it's like we're propping it up, whereas when you're talking about a game that's already really popular, you're just commenting on it?
You're just kind of going along with the coverage, that kind of thing. Yeah, I think that's a fair – I think that's a very fair way of looking at it for sure. Or like, because they're lower budget – they don't have to make as much money or have as big of a fan base, so to say, as something that's like a massive, massive budget that needs to make its returns over and over again. So, the audience is a little more fractured. It's a little bit smaller, that sort of thing.
Just one thing I want to add here, though, is I don't think people understand how massively different the interest level is between a cool small indie game and then the AAA release du jour. Like, you might be thinking it's just a multiplier, like, you know, 3 or 4 times as many people are interested in the big game as hearing about a cool new indie. And I really wish that were true. Like, I think
500 times.
And that's the difference, is that to an extent, until you've built up a real readership, and that's a lot harder in the day of social media where a lot of people increasingly are getting stories through, Facebook and Twitter. Most people are not going to just by default read everything that comes out on your outlet. Like, people are going to pick and choose, and what they're going to choose is stuff that they were already on some level interested in. And that means that it's not going to be the cool small indie game that very few people have heard of. Like, I wish it were. Like, I wish there were more room for evangelizing small, great works. But in terms of what readers respond to, what connects with people, it's hearing about something they're already familiar with. And it is like that, you know, 500 times difference in magnitude between the small indie game and then the AAA game that everybody is talking about. And I think that's really that's kind of the pressure. I think it is that we're looking around and seeing how things have changed and seeing how games coverage has changed. And it's becoming more of a monoculture in some ways. And that's the weird thing. Like there's more diversity in scale and in terms of who is making games than ever before. But in some ways, it also feels like there's never been more homogeneity in what people are into as readers. And that's the reality we're facing.
So if I understand you correctly, we're talking about globalization versus nativism, and what we really need to do is break up the big banks.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
You got it.
Except right. The banks here are readers, and so I don't
yes, the
fully
banks
know
are
how
the readers.
Yeah. Like actually that analogy isn't terrible because you're talking about Facebook. And that's, to an extent, that may be what you need to break up as, like, the avenue through which everyone consumes their media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe President Zuckerberg will get behind that in a couple
of
years.
President Zuck. Good old Zuckster.
As soon as he finishes his tour of this great land. He's going to show up in the Waypoint offices and be talking to Tim. So, Austin Walker, I hear that you run a games website. Tell me, how's that go?
Pretending to be Austin Walker is how I'm going to get a nice gig at Facebook.
It's true. It is true. You know, Facebook / President Zucker's Zucker. President Zuckerberg. Zucker.
Yeah.
Mr. President Zuckerberg, how do you feel? I mean, the only thing I'll end on is that even if stories about something we're passionate about don't do insanely well, we're still going to always write them. And we're always going to be looking for things we are passionate about, as well as the tentpole type of coverage. So don't worry. I think our listeners probably have a very wide range of tastes as well, as Rick does here. I think we're always going to try to strike a good balance, and it's always going to be a challenge, but one that, you know, I hope that we're up to. So,
I believe in you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Give me another number. Now that
another
you've
number.
Said
okay.
such nice things.
I probably did this number last time I was here. I don't know,
right.
77. 77. Star Wars came out in 1977.
40 years ago.
40 years ago.
You know, almost today.
Yeah.
Not almost, but, a few days off.
Yeah, this week.
77. All right, I'm getting there. There's a lot of scrolling happening. There's some long questions.
It's a big bucket, guys.
This bucket is, woof. This one comes from Tyler. My question doesn't really relate to politics and gaming, but maybe kind of.
Hell yeah.
Over the last year, I found it difficult to hold discussions with people I disagree with, as the conversations end up explosive and both sides end up angry. I'm generally pretty good at staying level-headed, but can succumb to overreaction once a conversation escalates. Gaming has had this problem for years, and typically if you don't agree with consensus opinions, you are immediately outcast. Has your team had internal discussions on trying to cultivate a reader/listener community that can avoid this kind of behavior? Does the Waypoint team have a desire to create a reader/listener community beyond those on social media? You can tell this one came out before the forums came out. That's all right. I'll keep reading. I'd love to participate and observe thoughtful discussions around gaming and the culture, but I've yet to see a successful place to do so. And when is the gaming community going to have an excuse to bring everyone to Chicago? I love the coasts, but I'm tired of the coasts. If Waypoint ever finds a reason to have a WayCon, it should be in Chicago. It's from Tyler.
I support that. There should be a WayCon in Chicago.
WayCon Chicago at Patrick's house.
By the way, I
was so excited about your story, I didn't mention that Patrick is also out. Yet he's in Montreal.
Oh, whoa.
He's doing wedding stuff. Not for himself, but for a buddy. So,
nice.
Yeah. Just have it at Patrick's house,
yeah.
I think, is what we should do. Yeah. I'm sure he'd be very happy. Pixel would be happy. The baby would be happy.
I know a lot of comedians in Chicago. That's kind of where I started doing stand-up. So it'll be a Waypoint stand-up show.
This is perfect.
At his house.
As you're taking over the website.
As I take over the website.
Exactly. Yeah. You can make it actually a comedy website.
You know, when I created Waypoint, my thought process was to create a space for people to have a wide-ranging discussion.
Yeah.
But focused on a waypoint, if you will. a positive waypoint. A place that a lot of gamers don't realize they have in their hearts.
Yeah. A waypoint in their hearts. A beating waypoint.
A lot of
waypoint.
Games are about violence, about hurting the other person. Huh. But we all, as a community, have a joy.
Yeah.
That brings us to these spaces.
Oh, my God.
And a stand-up comedy.
I'm buying it. Yeah, exactly. And also, by the way, it's a stand-up comedy website. Tyler, I think, is not the only person who tries to be level-headed but then gets very emotional about political conversations, something I very much appreciate. And you know, when I was a little philosophy major, I used to get into very fiery discussions and also get very mad, but also try very hard to be very intellectual, very level-headed, and just kill them with my words.
Philosophy arguments sounds like a strange...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to find that fun. Yeah. I sure don't anymore.
It just makes me think of that fight scene between Gandalf and Saruman. Like, what's actually
exactly
happening
exactly what
here?
It's like. That's exactly what it looks like. It actually might be more fun if we could actually do that. But yeah, it's very hard, especially when people's feelings are involved and when people's rights are involved and being played with, as they are so often in politics in America. So I appreciate that, Tyler. It is... really tough. The only advice I could possibly give if you want to engage in conversation with people you really don't agree with is to attempt to remain respectful, even if you can't keep it unemotional. Name calling tends to never do anything. You know, when I was at the ACLU, I had to do a lot of bridge building when I was in the communications department. There's a whole lot of trying to reach out to people, and this kind of only applies to people who are arguing in good faith, which is also a very, very slippery and difficult conversation to
this to is have, why I have right? actually stopped having a lot of these conversations, Danielle.
Yeah,
this is
that's like, the part that's hard. Yes.
In college, I was actually probably at my most conservative because, like, oh, man, like, I'm out from under my, like, liberal parents. And, like, no, it'd be crazy to think that, like, this entire justification for invading Iraq is just trumped up bullshit. Nobody would do that. Nobody's evil like that. That's preposterous. That's lefty conspiracy talk. And, like, years later, I'm like, oh, man, like, no. And it kind of feels like everything's been that in microcosm, where you realize, like, oh, like, this felt like a debate. It felt like if you could rationally convince the other person to your way of thinking, their thinking would change. But that's not actually how our beliefs are formed or shaped or adhered to, so hell with it.
Yeah.
I think, and I fall into this too, sometimes I enjoy the art of debate more than actually convincing the other person.
Right.
Like, actually, I'd be a little disappointed if they were convinced.
You just wanted to get in there.
Yeah, and I just love that back and forth.
You wanted to spar, you know?
I love Star Wars. My favorite, other than the prequels, which the politics was bad, but take Star Wars, A New Hope, 1977. My favorite scene in that entire film is when all those, when Grand Moff Tarkin and all those other Moffs or whatever are just in that room. I love it.
Yeah.
I love watching forces go against each other with words. Like, something's happening, but nothing is really happening. But somehow, this every, like, important conversation...
it's exciting.
It's exciting.
It is. Good debate is very exciting.
And how you get that leverage with words, it's weird. And it actually has a psychological impact.
Yes.
Tim, have you seen Margin Call?
No.
I think you would enjoy Margin Call, because it's like...
watch that.
Is it just like people in a conference room, but explosions are happening in the background?
No, there's explosions of rhetoric. It's like it's basically like an entire it's a movie about the financial meltdown in 2008.
Ah, yes.
But it definitely feels like it's a bunch of moffs gathered in a conference room on the eve of the financial meltdown, discussing what they're going to do.
Oh my God! A Star Wars 12 Angry Men would the best.
That would actually
for me.
That would be really cool. I used to get very, very into the, like, Next Generation episodes that were, like, legalese. Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, all legal. Like,
you're all
this
about
is
the
courtroom
head.
Drama.
Yeah.
Oh, the drumhead, baby. And also, of course, Measure of a Man. Like, that is, peak, like, Danielle philosophy and law and excitement, you know, in the world. I love that stuff. It just obviously gets very difficult when a lot of people are not arguing in good faith. Yeah. And you can't really tell anymore. My I just go with my gut, whether or not I engage in these conversations anymore. If I honestly feel like, hey, maybe somebody actually is interested in having a conversation, I might have that conversation.
Yeah.
I might be completely wrong, and I just kind of like do the thing where it's like, go with God. You know, if I feel like, okay, maybe I could get somewhere here. Maybe I can have a real exchange with a human being here. I try extremely hard to go outside of my extremely limited bubble of looking at the world. I try real hard, even though my opinions have not changed the slightest after attempting to go outside of that. But
yeah,
I think it helps me.
I feel like there should be a phrase and that allows you to enter a zone with another person.
Yeah.
Because it's sometimes it's like when you get a text and you don't know the tone.
Right.
Like, you just need a bridge into, like, let's enter the conversation dome.
Yes, exactly. The
like
thing
a
from
secure
where
you
know smart. Area. Yeah. Like, it
but
just
then it's
comes
like,
down.
Like, the pretense is that we're not, like, no, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings.
Right.
And let's forget about you. We can forget about anything that even happened in this conversation if we want to afterwards.
Like, this is just here's a safe place to have an actual discussion.
Yeah.
No, there's no hurt feelings.
Mm-hmm.
There's no pooping on somebody. There's no posturing in front of a crowd to get laughs and mm-hmm. giggles.
It's just like, trying it's like, to, and it's, you know, it's rare to have that kind of conversation.
It really is. I want that. I want the conversation.
And that's why when I created Waypoints.
Yes. Exactly.
That was the entire goal.
I don't know.
You were making a Waypoint conversation dome for all of us.
I think the moral of the story is I would make the most boring video game.
Yeah. I think it'd be great, actually.
By the way, the Chicago convention is going to be inside what we call the conversation dome. We're not going to have panels. It's just going to be just a whole lot of real talk inside Rosemont Horizon for some reason, and we're really gonna get down to brass tacks here. As far as like you know internal discussions, cultivating that you know that relationship, I think we've got a lot of good like. When we set up the forums, there was a lot of emphasis placed on how we would sort of lead those conversations and then who would be moderating them, what kind of tone we'd be striving for. But also a lot of it is helped by the fact that a lot of the people who sort of follow Waypoint speaks to a particular audience that I think we wanted to be speaking to, and they are kind of who populated our forums. And so it feels like it's successful so far. But Danielle, I'm curious, like what the conversations have been like around this.
Yeah, I mean, they can be very difficult at times. Danica deserves 1,000 shout outs, and as well as all the mods who do the hard work of trying to keep folks honest and genuinely make it a safer place for people to talk about anything that they need to talk about, anything they want to talk about. But honestly, I will just say this. When we started out, when we had the 72-hour live stream, we had an incredibly positive presence there. The most positive presence I've ever seen on Twitch to that point in my life, basically. I think the only other really very inclusive and positive space I'd been on in the internet was in the Idle Thumbs community. You know, sorry, shout outs to them. Good folks there. But yeah, just sort of cultivating like a, hey, here's what we do here. We talk about people, we have respect, like we joke around, but like everybody has respect for everybody else and attempts to have respect for everybody's, you know, feelings and the places they come from. And that's just an incredibly important thing if that's what you want to make. So yeah, shout outs to Danica and the mods who do that hard work every day and have to, you know, have to look at rules and have to look at everything on a case-by-case basis and all that, but do the good work, you know, and they do it.
Yeah.
All right, Rob.
There should be a mod pod.
Mod pod in the conversation dome. It's a mod pod. God, that's actually a really good idea. Maybe we should have a mod pod. All right, Rob, what's another number here?
87.
Oh, I love 87. Here we go. Sorry, I'm just scrolling. This is 86, 87. Oh, boy. All right, this is also for the Politics and Games special. This is from David. David said, hey, Waypoints persons. There seems to be a divide of game creators going left while game fans are skewing right. Things like indie games dealing with issues and subject matter from a more liberal point of view, while a very vocal segment of game fans are becoming interested or involved with right-wing ideas and causes. Is that something that game creators have expressed to you? How do they deal with this? Thanks, guys. Keep it up. Been longtime fans of you. Well, David, I think it's less that game fans are skewing right and more that there's just a whole lot of people in our culture that play games. And so there's a whole lot of people on the right. There's a whole lot of people on the left. There's probably way more somewhere in between the far extremes of those things. But we obviously see the most stuff from the most vocal extreme portions of the population. I do think a lot of game creators are fairly leftist, but that's kind of how it works with a lot of artists and creators kind of in general. I don't think that's unique to games by any means, but certainly there's going to be game creators who are far right, game creators who are far left, and all sorts of stuff as well. There's going to be a lot of outliers, and it's a whole ecosystem, yeah. Basically.
I mean, obviously, like, the leftist, on the people on the far left will have gaps of progress, if you will.
Oh, for and fucking
people
sure.
People on the far right will have glimmers of
stepping.
Yeah.
Stepping out of that
so
a little
bit. So that's also part of
that's
it.
That's also true. Yeah. Absolutely.
People always impress you and disappoint you.
Always.
Sometimes at the same time.
Yeah. Correct.
I think it's easy to a lot of game creators' politics do, I think, skew left, but at the same time, like, I know an awful lot who probably lean a bit farther to the right than you might think. So it's dangerous to generalize about this stuff. I think the bigger issue is that it comes down to who feels the most comfortable being vocal about their beliefs.
Yes.
I think a lot of people who sort of, like, on the game creation side, if they sort of have right-leaning views, very few of them are out in the open about that. Very few are, like, aggressively vocal about it. Whereas, you know, if you're making, like, for instance, there is no way for the Fulbright company to make the games they make and then not also discuss their politics. You know what I mean? Like, the two
right.
are intertwined. It's very comfortable and natural for them to do that. Whereas, I don't know, maybe you just want to make some sort of strategy game, and you might be a bit right-leaning, but you don't want that to be the focus, so you just shut up about it. And that's perfectly natural. And by the way, that actually could be a lot of people. I'm not obliquely referring to any one person or group
right.
of people. It's just
right.
you find a lot of diversity of opinion across games development. With where game fans are going, I don't buy it. Like,
yeah.
I think what you're seeing is a lot of game fans who are interpreting politics through their hobby, who are becoming, like, mobilized around their hobby, do tend to skew right, while a lot of the people who skew left are kind of busy with either real-world activism around, like, issues of inclusivity, or they're making pictures of, like, Mercy and Farrah kissing.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, I think that's...
So I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, so it, at times, it definitely does feel like, oh, damn, there's, like, a lot of sort of neo-fascism mobilizing around games. Well, I think it's because a lot of neo-fascists are comfortable, like, combining their love of fascism and games into one
yeah.
into one pitch, whereas a lot of people don't necessarily join, like, the culture where they're interested in fighting is not necessarily, you know, on the battlefield of games.
Yes. I think that's absolutely right. I also would say that that while we kind of talk about the discourse in one way or the other, it's also very true, at least for myself, that I am privy to a specific slice of that discourse as well. So I might yeah. see a lot of game creators who are very, very left-leaning, like you're talking about Fulbright, and certainly lots of other smaller indies might actually be very, very left-leaning, but I'm also not in conversation with every game developer at this point in time. You know, I don't have that ability yet.
You're not in the conversation
I'm not
zone.
In the conversation zone, exactly. So yeah, I definitely, I think you're correct about
well,
that.
Yes. Just one thing that occurs to me, too, and this is the last point I'll make about this, is also what gets interpreted as political or not. Like, I guess I was sort of saying I don't think like the leftist point of view is all that politicized in games, because I tend to think a lot about what defines the leftist discourse amounts to common courtesy. For me, like, you know, something we try to do at Waypoint is use more inclusive language, avoid ableist language. By the way, I am sure there are places I have botched this. I'm sure there are places I will botch this. But in general, the attempt is to avoid saying stuff that is thoughtlessly and that is sort of needlessly hurtful or shitty, and try to use turns of phrase, try to use language that is inclusive and not othering, not alienating. I don't view that as political. I view that as like a step along the road to like decency.
Yes.
But a lot of times that is interpreted very much as being a political stance. And I don't know, maybe it is. You know, maybe everything is political. But I think that is maybe a place where someone like me is liable to misunderstand why people think that we skew far to the left, because for us day to day, it doesn't feel like a political act. It just feels like,
right.
Don't be shitty.
Yeah. Yes. It's always the thing when the status quo is be shitty. Don't be shitty feels like a radical act, right?
Yeah.
Or it doesn't feel like it at all. Like you're saying, Rob, it doesn't feel like a radical act by any means. It's weird that it could be considered that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So completely. What I'm gathering is that we need a Jimmy Fallon of the video game world.
Wow.
Wow.
Tim, I'll be honest. I think we probably got the Jimmy Fallon of video games covered.
Yeah.
We have too many
one.
Jimmy Fallons of video games.
We got that one covered.
I think in 2015, it was pretty clear that a lot of people were just a little too happy to just sort of sit back there and be like, I don't know, man. I don't have an opinion on this stuff.
Let me ruffle your hair a little bit. Making a goof. We could use an Obama of video games.
That'd be great.
We could definitely, you know, that'd be cool. We could use all the good, honest, decent human beings of everything in the world we live in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's be good. Let's be good to people.
Yeah.
Or be good at it. You know what I'm saying? Oh, right. That's probably a good place for us to let you go enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day. Again, happy Memorial Day if you celebrate such a thing. This has been Waypoint Radio. Again, Patrick was doing a bachelor thing, a wedding
thing.
We
don't know what Patrick was doing.
Poor Patrick had a lot of travel mishaps on the way there. So I'm hoping he's having a good time. He deserves to have fun. And Austin was sick, so you got this crew for your Memorial Day, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So Tim, where can people find you online?
You can find me at TimBarnes451 on Twitter, the temperature at which jokes burn.
Hell yes. That was beautiful. Rob, where can people find you online?
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
Oh, fantastic. You can find me at DanielleRI, and you can find Austin at Austin_Walker. We know that one.
Yeah.
We're good at that one. Shout-outs, of course, to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine.
That's what you're listening to right now.
Yep, right now. Just as it's going on, is it going really nice? You can waypoint.zone/Bowen. You can learn a little bit more about Bowen. You can find all of our beautiful stuff on waypoint.vice.com and many other custom URLs, including new.donk.city. I won't go through the rest of them because I think we need to get out of this room. You can find all the stuff we do there. Also, of course, on Twitter at Waypoint, Facebook at Waypoint Vice, and YouTube, Waypoint Vice. So thank you again so much. We appreciate you. We appreciate your time. And I'm going to tell you to be good, but be good at
love.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.